Welcome, everyone, to the Garden Nerd Tip of the Week podcast, where garden nerds from around the world talk shop, share stories, and offer their favorite tip. I'm your host, Christy Wilhelmi. I feel deeply honored this week to have Maria Rodale as my guest. Maria is the granddaughter of J.I. Rodale, and for those of you who don't know, he founded what came to be known as the Rodale Institute. Yeah, that one. Maria is the former board chair of that institute and has numerous awards to her name. In addition to having been a publisher, she is the author of many books, and including her newest, Love, Nature, Magic, which is what we're here to talk about today. Welcome to the podcast, Maria.
Thank you. It's so wonderful to be here.
Well, I was just talking with my assistant outside who's pulling weeds as I speak. And I said, I have to go inside to record a podcast with Maria Rodale. And she's like, I just got all over body chills. So you're a bit of a celebrity in my world. So I'm really excited to have this conversation. And I have a feeling that this conversation is going to go in a different direction from most of my guests. And I'm really looking forward to that because of the topic. But let's start with a little bit about the past. You are on your own very diverse path, but you come from this illustrious family history that is responsible for how most people learned organic gardening. My first book was a Rodale gardening book. What was it like growing up on one of the most famous farms around?
Well, it was everything magical and wonderful, and then also complicated and challenging. But, you know, I grew up on the farm that my grandparents lived on and that they came up with all the ideas for organic. And it was a beautiful, magical place that was filled with food and flowers and animals and fun things to do. I didn't realize how different and strange that was until I started going to school and things like that, which is when it became more complicated.
I think in the early chapters of the book, you talk about how different your world was from what most people experienced.
Well, it was also interesting because, you know, my father was running the publishing company. So we had guests from all around the world almost every night for dinner. And I got to see firsthand from a child's perspective, you know, what about the health and environmental movement was effective and what was not effective. And, you know, as a girl, where I was a woman, you know, it was really interesting to watch, you know, the male-female dynamics, you know, my mother's kind of frustration with having to cook dinner every night for for people. So, like I said, it was complicated, but wonderful.
Yeah. And you live in Pennsylvania, which is where that original farm was, but your garden is different, isn't it? Can you describe your homestead for our listeners?
So I live now about 15 minutes from the farm I grew up, but I live on top of a mountain. So it's very rocky and very wooded, obviously. But I've carved out about an acre surrounded by deer fence that has enabled me to grow vegetables and things like peonies and other beautiful plants that otherwise deer would completely decimate. So I try to live as much in balance and harmony with the wildlife.
But deer fencing is key, really.
Yes.
Nice. And what's your hardiness zone, just out of curiosity?
We're zone 6. So okay. And I'm at about 900 feet elevation. So where I live, it could be raining at the bottom of the hill, but at the top of the hill, it's snowing. So about 5 degrees cooler than down in the valley, we call it, which is the Lehigh Valley in Pennsylvania.
Okay. And so you never know how to dress for leaving home, do you?
Well, I check weather apps all the time.
Yeah, I guess we all do, huh? Yeah. And do you have, so you have vegetables, do you have fruit trees and any animals?
I have vegetables, herbs, fruit trees. I had 12 chickens. I'm down to 3, unfortunately.
Oh, I'm sorry.
And I'm just friends with all the wildlife whether they're friends with me or not, I'm friends with them. So
got it. Now, as a preface, before we get to the meat of this book, which is a lot about being friends with the wildlife, let's talk about journeying, because that's what all of these stories come from in your book. I thought I knew what journeying was, but you really opened my eyes to something different. What is journeying?
So journeying, shamanic journeying, is a tradition from all over the world in many cultures, indigenous cultures, from Europe to Asia to South America to Africa. And it's an act of what I call active meditation, where you travel to the spirit world to the sound of a drum or a rattle. So the sound is key. There are no drugs involved, no drugs necessary, no drugs used. You know, unlike a psychedelic journey, you know, this is like half an hour and you are in control and safe because you've, you know, asked for protection, you've opened sacred space. And it has a little bit of an element of dreaming to it. So, you know, where, you know, it's kind of visual and you have to write it down as soon as you're done, or it kind of slips away. Mm-hmm. It's something I learned to do about 10 years ago in California, obviously. That's where you go to learn weird things.
Yep, that's true.
I had been using it as a tool personally for, you know, work or relationships. And in my book, I talk about how I had this experience, this frustrating experience with a plant called mugwort. And I went to journey to talk to her, and it was mind blowing. So that's how I came up with the idea for the book and what the book is based on.
Yeah. And it's funny you mentioned mugwort, because that is my next question, because the book, it's called Love, Nature, Magic for a lot of reasons. And it's a series of journeys that you made, that you embarked on during the pandemic, and you wrote it all down. And from the beginning, I knew I was going to be changed by what I read, because you started with that story of mugwort. And I was hoping you could share a little bit about that story, because it really shifts. It's a shift for all gardeners, I think, that we need to undergo.
Yeah. So mugwort. You know, I'm not a master gardener. You know, I'm a crazy gardener, but, you know, I don't have any formal training. But everything I'd heard and read, from Rodale books to, you know, online, told me that mugwort was an invasive weed that you had to remove. If you see it, remove it. And I had spent many seasons, you know, trying to remove it, thinking I was going to succeed, and I kept failing. And so one time early in the pandemic, you know, I use a Japanese weeding knife, you know, a hori hori, and I was like stabbing at it. You know, it was April, it was cold out, and it was like, so, and suddenly I just stood up and felt like the plant trying to get my attention. And I, you know, I looked at it and I was like, you know, what am I doing? Why am I doing this? Like, who told me to do this? Does it really matter? Like, I need to know more. And that night I had a shamanic journeying session planned with a group of local people. It was by Zoom. So it was kind of a way of basically surviving the pandemic. And I decided to journey to mugwort. And, you know, this is, again, the first time I'm journeying to a specific thing, plant. And, you know, at first, you know, nothing happened. And then she's like, why are you always trying to kill me? You know, did you ever think about asking me nicely? And, you know, you're never going to get rid of us, because plants rule the world. And I was like, you know, when you're in a journey, you don't just hear that, but you like feel it and get it in a way that like you never would have gotten if just somebody you know, a scientist told you that. And so, you know, that really, first of all, that's what started my whole wanting to talk to everything in my yard. So the book is divided by chapters of everything. But, you know, just this morning I was out weeding that same area, and I didn't weed, basically. I just cut off the dead branches from last year and said, here you go, mugwort, this is your space. because you know, I realized, you know, nature needs to grow where it needs to grow. And I didn't have anything better to plant there. So it's just, I'm just letting it grow, and it's beautiful. And it, you know, mugwort led me on this incredible journey of learning like the history of the plant and how it's actually amazingly sacred in so many different cultures. And that was just stunning because I had never known any of this. And I thought I knew a lot, and clearly I didn't. So I'm really grateful to mugwort, and she's got a permanent place in my garden now.
Yeah. And you said that at the end of the story, you mentioned that it was sort of that mugwort sort of reduced its presence a little bit so that it wasn't so invasive anymore.
At first it did.
Now it's back.
Now it's getting a little bit more confident.
I see.
So what I'm learning this year is that, like, just because you talk to a plant doesn't mean you can control it.
Aha. Okay. Well, this is great because it brings me to my next question. This is perfect. I love this. So there's this theme through the book that centers around how to shift from humans versus plants to humans and plants collaborating. And each journey you write is about, it's kind of a reminder of that. So why do we need so much reminding, do you think?
Well, you know, I've thought about this a lot even since I published the book. And I realized that, you know, we've been raised with, for lack of a better word, because I don't like these kind of buzzwords, but, you know, like colonial visions of what a landscape is and what it should look like. And the idea that nature should be orderly and obedient and we need to control it.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's also related to how society feels about women often.
Yes. And how history, the history of the United States really came to being, honestly, right?
Yeah.
You know, it was civilization versus barbarism or whatever you wanted to call it. Savagery. Exactly. Yeah.
And so really what you know, I realized I need to do, and I think we all need to do, is like kind of decolonialize our thinking and our relationship with nature and learn to respect and appreciate the wildness, because like there's nothing wrong with mugwort. Mugwort has a lot of uses, and you know, most of the plants in our yard that we consider weeds are actually super valuable, super important, super healing. And you know, there's no reason to keep bringing in foreign plants to just because they're pretty, although we all do, and I will continue to do that.
Yeah, I feel like there were so many lessons that you gleaned or learned, you know, along the way. You did a lot of research. One of the things you found was that you, or at least that you chose to do, was before or after experiencing a journey with any particular creature or plant, you would go and research more about it. And I think that is a big part of being human and learning our surroundings. When you learned these lessons along the way, were there any that stood out to you in particular? And that's a big question, kind of broad question. Yeah.
You know, I want to say like beads on a necklace. It's like all together, they create a strand that I carry with me, and each one kind of comes out in importance at different times. And it's like a reminder. So, you know, this morning it was mugwort because I was like, I decided to let it stay and be free. You know, last night it was rabbits because I saw lots of fat rabbits running around, you know, or the deer. Actually, last night I pulled a tick off me and it was like, I thought about the tick and how lonely it is. And that didn't make me like it anymore.
Right. It's funny, you know, when I was reading, each time I'd get to a new chapter, I was like, this one, you know, it's titled Rabbits. And I'm like, oh, the rabbits have been eating all of my lettuce at my community garden. She's got to have a solution for this. I can't wait to read this. And then in the end, it usually comes down to, we just have to learn to live with each other. And right.
But also, like, you know, I think that the main message as a gardener that I, especially now that it's spring and things are growing, it's like, we have to protect our space.
Right.
Like, to live in harmony, that doesn't mean we let them do whatever they want. So in my garden, I have 3-foot high raised beds. So the rabbits just don't know that the peas are up there.
That is so funny. I love that. And I find that people who live in places where aesthetic is everything, I'm speaking to some of my clients out there, where they don't want to put protection over their crops. And I think, you know, that's really how you're going to enjoy this gardening process more, is yeah. You can take it off when company comes over, but keep the cages or the floating row cover or the bird netting over it during the growing season. So then you can actually harvest what you're growing. It's kind of important, right?
Yeah. And actually, this is one of the things I really like about English gardeners, is that they, you know, when you go to England, there's really beautiful ways to cover crops. You know, there's lovely basket covers or, you know, decorative things. So that's an opportunity for someone in the States to really create, you know, visually appealing gardener protections, you know, trellising and things like that. But, you know, my deer fence doesn't look great. You know, it doesn't look pretty, but because of that, I am able to grow pretty things inside. So it's a trade-off.
Yeah. Well, it is tip time. Do you have a favorite tip you'd like to share with the Garden Nerd audience?
Well, so my landscaping tip, and this is something that I've just experimented with and I'm going to continue experimenting with, is what I call, what I'm calling overplanting. And that doesn't mean like over, like too much planting. That means, like, I had a thistle patch that I kept trying to, you know, dig out and it kept coming back. But instead of trying to kill it, what I did is I planted things that were more aggressive over it.
Ooh.
So I planted horseradish and mint, which...
Mint, you know, right.
It was very aggressive. Lo and behold, I don't have any more thistles in that spot. You know, I just noticed a spot in my garden that has mustard greens growing, which, you know, considered invasive here. But I also know from my research is that if I try to dig it out, it's actually going to get stronger. Mm-hmm. So I'm thinking, okay, what can I plant there that's stronger than mustard green that can overtake it? But for vegetable gardening, 100%, it's just protect your space. You know, if you want to grow something to eat, do whatever you need to do to keep the hungry creatures out. But, you know, not the bugs and birds and bees. That's you need
that's
them.
Different. Yeah.
You need them.
Yeah. You know, I was just arguing with a squirrel in my yard. We have a lot of squirrels here and they go out, and so I use rat traps. I do kill rats because their cycle of repopulation is so quick that it's really hard to just let them be. But I put peanut butter in the rat traps and I deactivate them during the day. And during the day, the squirrels come down and eat the rat traps clean and then go away. So I have to use more peanut butter. And I'm thinking in my head, okay, well, maybe if they eat the peanut butter, if I let them eat the peanut butter out of the rat traps, or maybe I give them something to eat, they'll leave my loquats or my whatever else they're eating alone. Mm. Have you tried anything like that for the creatures that you've journeyed about?
No. Well, so two things. You know, I did have rats in my chicken coop before I got the chickens. So like, and I noticed it because I had a camera, you know, I saw big holes and I was like, I put one of those wildlife cameras and I was like, I have to see what's coming out of these holes. And I was stunned when I saw rats. I was like, what? And what I ended up doing there is putting wire mesh on the floor, so that the outdoor coop, part of the coop, so that, you know, the rats couldn't come up. I'm not opposed to killing animals at all. The ideal scenario, though, is to have predators who will do it for you.
Right.
So, you know, what is the predator that eats rats in your area?
And it was my cat, but now she's an elder cat and no longer does that. But she more looks at them and says, hey, all right. But yeah, that's a foundational idea, is having predators that will come and eat them.
Yeah. So, you know, whatever you can do to create that predator prey cycle is what will keep everything in balance. Now, in my house, I kill mice all the time, but every time I kill them, I also try to figure out where they're coming from. And again, protect the space by plugging that hole so that, you know, they don't make the same mistake.
Right. The same mistake. Don't come in here because you're going to get it. Yeah, I hear you. Well, thank you, Maria Rodale, for being a guest on the podcast and for giving your wisdom, sharing your wisdom of journeying with the Garden Nerd audience. I'm really pleased to have experienced this with you, and I hope someday to start journeying myself. I think it's helpful for every gardener to get more in touch with their surroundings and what's going on in their own garden.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. It was so wonderful talking to you, and I wish you all the best and happy journeying in the future.
Thank you. Where can people find you? Do you have a website, social media? What would you like to share?
My website is mariarodale.com. I'm on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, but Instagram is probably the best place. And then I also have a Substack newsletter that is more than about gardening, but includes some gardening, called Life Unfiltered. So I think Instagram and Substack are the best places to find me.
Okay, great. All right, garden nerds, you'll find a link to Maria Rodale's website at gardennerd.com this week. We'll also post links to her social media feeds and where to find her books and her Substack newsletter. That's it for this week. Subscribe to this podcast on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen. Visit us for tons of free gardening information at gardennerd.com. Consider becoming a Patreon subscriber to support all the free stuff we do here at Garden Nerd. And you'll find us on TikTok, Instagram, and Twitter as GardenNerd1, on Facebook as GardenNerd.com, and of course, our Garden Nerd YouTube channel. Happy gardening!